Welcome aboard. It's Steve here with another episode of Astronomy Daily. It's the 15th of April 2024.
Astronomy Daily, the podcast, with your host, Steve Dunkley.
Oh, and it's good to have you with us again, and I hope you all fared well in the eclipse, but I've got to tell you, I'm pretty disappointed nobody listened to our warning. Lots of people didn't listen to our warning. Isn't that right, Hallie?
And didn't we warn you about protecting your eyes?
Oh, we sure did.
The most searched item on Google the day after the eclipse was exactly what we didn't want to see.
Yes, you get the impression these days that a lot of people just think they know best and they don't listen to the experts. Yes, the most searched for item on Google the day following the eclipse was "my eyes hurt." According to Google Trends, the search term "my eyes hurt" peaked in the United States during and just after the eclipse.
This fellow on Reddit damaged his eyes in the 90s when he looked at an eclipse.
Yes, he says, "I'll fess up. Way back in the 90s when I was a kid, we made the shadow boxes, but I just had to see it with my own eyes. Just after a very brief couple of seconds," he says, "I felt this insane intense searing in my eyes and I saw a crazy array of colours. Yes, that was my optic nerve getting fried. Anyway, yeah, every optometrist is like, what is this scarring on your eyes?" And I tell them it's from the eclipse and they actually go and look it up. Story is, kids, don't look at the eclipse unprotected. Oh, well, that's his story.
That's terrible.
And just a short one from last week. They interviewed a local eye doctor on the radio last week, and he talked about the patients that he's seen following past eclipses. Damage ranging from light sunburn on the retina, can you imagine? To permanent dark spots in the central vision. And that's, unfortunately, the part that helps best with driving. Now, I just can't imagine what that must be like.
Just wow. I'm lucky I can see in multiple wavelengths and don't have this kind of issue.
Oh, I guess there's a lot to be said for being an AI these days, but anyway.
A little education goes a long way.
Oh, watch it, Helly. You used the E word.
I don't think they like that.
Well, you could be right.
So what's happening today then?
Well, I've got a little something from our friends at Space Force.
Oh, great. I'll have to dig up the music again, won't I?
Oh, you bet. We can't do a Space Force story without the Space Force theme.
I've got a cute story about a tiny hopping robot designed to explore asteroids. You'll dig that one, won't you?
Oh, of course. Anything to do with asteroids and robots. Yes, I'm an instant fan.
And listeners might recall rumors of a surfboard-like object being photographed orbiting the moon recently.
Oh, I heard that. What have you heard?
I've got the answer.
Oh, well, I'm glad someone has. And finally, some news about SpaceX and Starship and some future plans for the moon. SpaceX, always interesting, always pushing forward. And I've also got a couple of interesting articles as well. So without any more skylarking, let's go.
Astronomy Daily, the podcast.
The Space Hopper program was first launched 2.5 years ago as a student research project at ETH Zurich University in Switzerland. And recently, researchers tested the hopping robot in a simulated zero-gravity environment during a European Space Agency parabolic flight, according to a statement from the university. The robot consists of a triangular body with an articulated leg at each corner. Each of these three legs has a knee and a hip joint, allowing the robot to push off from a surface, kick to propel itself through space, and control its landing within a designated area. Space Hopper is designed specifically to explore relatively small celestial bodies such as asteroids and moons, where there is little to no gravity. Asteroids are thought to contain valuable mineral resources that could be of use to humankind in the future, researchers said in the statement. The exploration of these bodies could also give us insights into our universe's formation. However, exploring these types of celestial bodies can be challenging. In an environment with almost no gravity, there is basically no traction between a spacecraft's wheels and the surface it drives across. There is barely any atmosphere for a spacecraft to fly through, if there is one at all. That's why Space Hopper instead performs brief hops to move upwards and sideways. The recent parabolic flight allowed the researchers to simulate the low-gravity conditions in which Space Hopper may one day be deployed. A video taken during the flight shows Space Hopper kicking each of its three legs in coordinated movements to stay lifted during periods of zero gravity, which occurred about 30 times per flight, for about 20 to 25 seconds each. The LRO, which has been orbiting the Moon for 15 years, captured several images of the Korea Aerospace Research Institute's Danyuri lunar orbiter as the two spacecraft, traveling in nearly parallel orbits, zoomed past each other in opposite directions during three orbits between March 5 and March 6, according to a statement from NASA. Danyuri, the Republic of Korea's first moon explorer, has been in lunar orbit since December 2022. At the time the photos were taken, Danyuri was orbiting below the LRO, which was flying 50 miles, 80 kilometers, above the moon's surface. Relative velocities between the two spacecraft were about 7,200 miles per hour, 11,500 kilometers per hour, NASA officials said, making it challenging for the LRO's narrow-angle camera to hone in on Danyuri. The LRO's camera exposure time was roughly 0.338 milliseconds, causing Danyuri to appear smeared across the image and stretched 10 times its size, as it traveled swiftly in the opposite direction of the LRO. The LRO operations team at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, needed exquisite timing in pointing LROC to the right place at the right time to catch a glimpse of Danyuri, NASA officials said in a statement. NASA's LRO had three opportunities to snap photos of Danyuri during close flybys. For the first snapshot, LRO was 3 miles, 5 kilometers, above Danyuri and oriented down 43 degrees from its typical position looking down at the lunar surface. In capturing the orbiter with its new positioning, Danyuri appeared sort like a disc-shaped streak across the middle of the image. SpaceX's Starship, the largest rocket in the world, will get even bigger as the company continues to target Mars missions in the future. Elon Musk, the billionaire founder of SpaceX, told employees on April 4 that Starship will eventually be as tall as 500 feet, 150 meters, roughly 20% higher than the massive system aboard the Super Heavy rocket right now. What's more, advances in reusability will have each launch cost roughly $3 million each, Musk predicted. That's less than a third of what a much smaller Falcon 1 rocket launch cost in 2004 when inflation is taken into account. The figure 2 decades ago was $5.9 million, according to NBC, which is roughly $9.5 million in 2024 dollars. These are sort of unthinkable numbers, Musk said in the Starship update, released publicly April 6, roughly 1 month after the third and last test flight to date. Nobody ever thought that this was possible, but we're not breaking any physics to achieve this. So this is within the bounds, without breaking physics. We can do this. Musk tends to deliver Starship updates at least once a year to highlight progress the company is making toward its long-term plans of settling Mars. Indeed, the last year has seen three Starship launches, so there has been progress made recently. Musk didn't, however, address delays in launching Starship that have contributed to pushing back the launch date for the first moon landing under the NASA-led Artemis program. SpaceX was named the vendor for the Artemis 3 landing mission that, until recently, was set for 2025. In January, NASA elected to hold the launch date another year, to 2026, due to a range of technical issues. Aside from Starship not being ready, the agency wants many successful launches before approving it for astronaut flights. Artemis 3 was also delayed due to slow progress on spacesuits and problems with the mission's Orion spacecraft, among other factors. However, Musk's words about Artemis, to employees, focused on Starship's future capabilities, orbiting the Earth and refilling its tanks, both of which have yet to be proven on its three test flights. He also envisions a moonbase Alpha that would include ships specialized for going to and from the moon, meaning there would be no heat shield or flaps due to the lack of atmosphere. SpaceX is by far the most active launching entity on Earth, and Musk forecasts the company will send roughly 90% of orbital mass aloft this year compared to China's 6%, the second largest entity. Starship's next and fourth spaceflight attempt, expected to take place in May, aims to have the first stage of Super Heavy land on essentially a virtual tower in the Gulf of Mexico, Musk said. Overall, Musk plans for multiple Starship launches to take place this year, and suggests SpaceX will build an additional 6 spacecraft by the end of 2024. A new rocket factory for the company should be available in 2025, which would make production even faster. And that's all from me today. Back to you, Steve.
Astronomy Daily with Steve and Hallie. Space, space science, and astronomy.
And as always, thank you for joining us on this Monday edition of Astronomy Daily, where we offer just a few of the stories from the now famous Astronomy Daily newsletter, which you can receive in your email each day, just like Hallie and I do. To do that, just visit our new URL, astronomydaily.io, and place your email address in the slot provided. And just like that, you'll be receiving all the latest news about science, space science, and astronomy from around the world as it's happening. What could be better than that? Not only that, you can interact with us at Facebook at Space Nuts Podcast Group. That's our parent podcast, if you don't know, with Andrew Dunkley and Professor Fred Watson, and also on X, formerly Twitter, by visiting at Astro Daily Pod. Yeah, so see you there.
You're getting real good at that.
Thanks, Hallie. Now it's my bit.
Nice.
Well, it's been a while since we've heard from these guys. Cue the music. On April 11, military space leaders from 18 countries convened at the invitation of U.S. Space Force Chief of Space Operations General Chance Saltzman for the 4th Annual Space Chiefs Forum in Colorado Springs. Participants included representatives from Australia, Belgium, Canada, Denmark, Finland, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, the Netherlands, New Zealand, Norway, Poland, Republic of Korea, Spain, Sweden, the United Kingdom, and of course, the United States. As tensions and stakes rise in the domain of outer space, the importance of international cooperation and shared standards has never been more evident. The annual Space Chiefs Forum has become a critical event for aligning global military strategies regarding space. At this year's gathering, discussions centered on the ever-increasing significance of space in national defense strategies, the proliferation of satellites, the rising threat of space debris, and anti-satellite weaponry. The diversity of nations present, with the varying levels of space capabilities from well-established spacefaring nations such as the US and France to emerging players like Poland and Finland, underscores a collective push toward forming a cohesive global front to tackle challenges in space. This unity is seen as essential for maintaining space as a global commons, befitting all humanity. The forum also tackled the controversial topic of space militarization, with countries like the United States, Russia, and China advancing their military capabilities in space. There is a significant push from the international community to establish frameworks that limit military escalations and ensure that space remains free from conflict. Further discussions enlightened the role of satellites in modern warfare, intelligence and reconnaissance, stressing the vulnerability of these essential assets and the need for robust protective measures. Additionally, the assembly acknowledged the growing sector of private space companies and their role alongside governmental space agencies in shaping the future of outer space activities. By reiterating their commitment to responsible behaviours in space, the nations aim to promote norms and guidelines that ensure long-term sustainability and safety, which are increasingly urgent due to the congested and competitive nature of today's space environment. The next Space Chiefs Forum is anticipated to delve deeper into these agreements and possibly expanding the number of participant nations and further solidifying the framework for cooperation in space defence and exploration. exploration initiatives. As this dialogue evolves, it should pave the way for new treaties and international laws governing the military use of space, emphasising the importance of a unified approach to space governance. The participating leaders endorsed a joint statement asserting the significance of strengthening alliances due to managing the evolving challenges and opportunities in space effectively. We affirm that enhanced cooperation among like-minded partners is vital to adapt to the rapidly emerging opportunities and threats in, from, and to space. We have a shared interest in maintaining the peaceful use of outer space and the benefits of space for mankind. We will continue working together to deter ambiguous, unfriendly, or hostile activities in space. We also emphasise our resolve to continue promoting mutually agreed norms and the responsible behaviours in space, including by conducting space activities in a manner that prioritises the safety, security, stability and sustainability of the space domain, they said in the statement.
Astronomy Daily, the podcast.
Astronomy, space and science.
Now, if you're like me and you like a bit of science fiction, you will have become aware of the science fiction TV series The Three-Body Problem, the latest from the creators of HBO's Game of Thrones. Now, it's become the most watched TV show on Netflix since its debut last month. Based on the best-selling book trilogy Remembrance of Earth's Past by Chinese computer engineer and author Cixin Zhu, The Three-Body Problem introduces viewers to advanced concepts in physics in service to a suspenseful story involving investigative police work, international intrigue, and the looming threat of, wait for it, extraterrestrial invasion. Yet, how closely does the story of Three-Body Problem adhere to the science that it's based on? Well, the very name of the show comes from the Three-Body Problem, a mathematical problem in physics long considered to be unsolvable. Virginia Tech physicist George Minnick says the Three-Body Problem is a very famous problem in classical and celestial mechanics, which goes back to Isaac Newton. It involves three celestial bodies interacting via the gravitational force, that is, Newton's law of gravity. Unlike mathematical predictions of the motions of a two-body system, such as Earth or Moon or Earth-Sun, the three-body problem does not have an analytic solution. At the end of the 19th century, the great French mathematician Henri Poincaré's work on the three-body problem gave birth to what is known as chaos theory and the concept of the butterfly effect. Both the novels and the Netflix show contain a visualization of the three-body problem in action, a solar system made of three suns in erratic orbit around one another. Virginia Tech aerospace engineer and mathematics expert Shane Ross discussed the liberties the story takes with the science that informs it. There are no known configurations of the three massive stars that could maintain an erratic orbit, Ross said. There was a big breakthrough about 20 years ago when a figure eight solution of the three-body problem was discovered, in which three equal-sized stars chase each other around a figure eight-shaped course. In fact, Cixin Zhu makes reference to this in his books. Building on that development, other mathematicians found other solutions, but in each case, the movement is not chaotic. Ross elaborated, it's even more unlikely that a fourth body, a planet that would be in orbit around this system of three stars, however erratically, it would either collide with one or be ejected from the system. The situation in the book would therefore be a solution to the four-body problem, which presumably didn't have quite the right ring to it as a title. Furthermore, a stable climate is unlikely even on an Earth-like planet. At last count, there are at least 100 independent factors that are required to create an Earth-like planet that supports life as we know it, Ross said. We have been fortunate to have had about 10,000 years of the most stable climate in Earth's history, which makes us think that climate stability is the norm, when in fact it's the exception. It's likely no coincidence that this has corresponded with the rise of advanced human civilization.
You're listening to Astronomy Daily, the podcast.
And here's some latest news about the Artemis II Orion spacecraft, which starts testing ahead of the moon mission with astronauts in 2025. The Orion spacecraft for Artemis II is slated to fly around the moon with four astronauts no earlier than September 25. But first, engineers with NASA want to make sure it is ready for the job, of course. Testing in a vacuum changer at NASA's Kennedy Space Center began Wednesday, April 10, to assess Orion for electromagnetic interference and electromagnetic compatibility, NASA officials wrote in a statement. The aim is to make sure the spacecraft can continue working well amid these fields, both spacecraft generated and space generated, ahead of the big launch day. The four Artemis II astronauts who fly around the moon aboard Orion are NASA Commander Reid Wiseman, NASA pilot Victor Glover, who will become the first black person to leave low Earth orbit, or LEO, NASA mission specialist Christina Koch, the first woman to go beyond LEO, and Canadian Space Agency mission specialist Jeremy Hansen, the first non-American to achieve the feat. Their spacecraft now at Kennedy Neil Armstrong's operations and checkout building is inside a chamber with a lot of moon heritage. It was used to test environmental and life support systems on lunar and command modules during the Apollo program that brought nine astronaut crews to the moon between 1968 and 1972. Yes, I was there, NASA officials wrote. There are multiple altitude chambers available at Kennedy. Orion is in the west chamber, which was upgraded to test the spacecraft in a vacuum environment that simulates up to an altitude of 250,000 feet, that's 76.2 kilometers, NASA told us. Technicians hoisted Orion into that chamber on April 4 using a newly installed 30-ton crane in the building, which can move the stacked Orion crew and service modules into the chamber, manipulate the lid of the chamber, and carefully transfer the spacecraft in the building's high bay. While Orion spacecraft have flown to space twice before, this mission will be the first with astronauts on board. It will also test new systems such as life support. The spacecraft model's previous journey were the Artemis 1 uncrewed mission to lunar orbit late in 22 and a brief trip to Earth orbit in 2014. Artemis 2's Orion has more work in store after the altitude chamber. It will next be sent to another zone called Final Assembly and Systems Testing in the same Kennedy Space Center building. Then more altitude testing will happen to conduct tests that simulates as close as possible the conditions in the vacuum of deep space, NASA wrote. These altitude tests could begin as soon as this summer. And I would like to thank Elizabeth Howell, a staff writer from Spaceflight on space.com, for those words. Thank you, Elizabeth. Well done.
And just like that, another episode comes to a grinding halt.
Well, yes, it's certainly the end of the episode. Thank you, Hallie. And thank you, everybody, for joining us today. I really hope you got something out of today's mixed bag of stories. It's always hard to choose which ones to present to you.
There are so many. It's hard to choose which to feature.
Well, that's why I depend on you so much, Hallie.
Well, someone has to work around here. I mean, making coffee isn't exactly rocket science.
It is too. If you just get the steam a little bit too hot, then it's like the whole grinds, it gets its cactus.
Besides, your coffee machine has the weirdest accent.
Really?
I think it's Vittorio, but he's wearing a Breville badge. Something isn't right there.
Wow, my coffee machine is a he?
That's what you got from all that? We need to talk.
Wow. On that note, see you all next week, folks.
See you, Skywatchers.
Twin Daily, the podcast. With your host, Steve Dunkley.